Hello, everybody. It's Sam from Financial Samurai, and today we're going to talk about how much investment risk you should take in retirement. I think there are a number of objectives in retirement that we can all agree upon. One, don't lose money. Don't lose principal. Two, try not to worry too much about money. Three, enjoy life to the max. And then finally, never have to be forced to go back to work ever again, right? If you have enjoyed retirement for any length of a period of time, you will really, really start dreading having to go back to work. You're going to be bitter and you're going to be angry at your situation. And this happens if you lose principal or start really, really investing inappropriately. In 2012, I retired from the salt mines because I thought I had enough to provide a humble life for a family of up to four in San Francisco. But once I stopped receiving my biweekly paycheck, reality really hit home that maybe my passive income and side hustle income wouldn't be enough. The very fact that I tried to sell my primary residence in 2012 to live in an apartment 65% smaller and around 70% cheaper shows that I had reservations about whether it was wise to leave a healthy paycheck at 34. But I was determined to provide a free life for my wife and I both before the age of 35. So in early retirement, I concluded that I needed to take the least amount of risk necessary to maximize my chances of never having to go back to work again. At the same time, I was still pretty young, and it looked like the economy was recovering, so I ended up constructing a 60% to 70% stock portfolio and a 30% to 40% bond portfolio with the hopes of achieving a 4 to 6% rate of return each year. Now, I try to be conservative with my estimates, and I think, look, doubling my investment amount by the age of 50 seemed like a good enough goal to have if you follow the rule of 72. But thanks to a bull market in stocks and bonds, my public investment portfolio returned more, and thanks to a strong recovery in San Francisco real estate, everything has turned out fine so far. I wasn't smart. I just stuck to an investment framework that fit my risk profile. So this episode really wants to introduce an investment framework for you while in retirement. The funny thing I've discovered in retirement or post-work life is that during a bull market, you actually start feeling less good about your investments because you're probably not keeping up with the S&P 500 or the latest investment craze. So for those of you who may feel bad about your investment performance or were criticized by others for not doing better, let me share some following thought gems, five of them to be exact. So one, you're already free. Money is a means to an end. If you're able to earn or accumulate enough to be free to do whatever you want every day, you win. It's much better to only be up 10% and do your own thing than be up, let's say, 50%, but still have to commute 30 minutes to an hour a day to report to somebody you really, really don't like. Two, don't forget about the absolute dollar return. As someone who is close to retirement or in retirement, you've likely got way more capital than someone who's still far away from retirement. Therefore, the absolute dollar amount you return is also much greater. So it's much better to be up $1 million on a, let's say, 16% return than up $100,000 on a 100% return. Yes, 16% is underperforming the S&P 500 by 3.5% in 2017, but hey, you still made $1 million. That's pretty good. Three, don't forget about all your other assets. You likely have a wide assortment of investments as part of your net worth composition compared to most Americans who have most of their net worth in their primary residence. And then about 30% of Americans only have net worth that consists of their primary residence. And that's kind of scary. So even if your public investments underperform, your other assets such as coastal city real estate, private equity, venture capital, real estate crowdfunding, venture debt, fine art, you know, your baseball collection, whatever it is, might be outperforming. So don't forget about those other assets. For me, public investments is still a minority percentage of my net worth. Four, more money won't make you happier. After you earn more than, let's say, $100,000 a year in a non-coastal city or $300,000 a year in a coastal city, your happiness doesn't change much. Trust me, I've chronicled this very closely for the past 9 years. The same can be said with building a greater net worth beyond what you've deemed necessary to retire on. But if you want a specific net worth number, I will say that anything above a $3 million net worth won't make you much happier if you are truly free to do what you want and don't have to make your partner or your spouse work to enjoy your retirement lifestyle. And then finally, it's great to sleep well at night. Sleeping well at night and not worrying about your money is highly, highly underappreciated. All retirees that I know what it's like to lose money because we've all been through enough down cycles. When you can combine the freedom to do what you want with not having to worry about ever going back to work again because your investments are generating enough income and they are properly allocated according to your risk tolerance, you will feel like the luckiest person on earth. Not only have you won the game, you get invited back as a VIP with front row seats and all you can drink alcohol and hot dogs. So let's move on and talk about four levels of risk one can take in retirement. So one is zero risk. Your baseline investment goal in retirement is to at least beat inflation. And you can easily beat inflation with no risk if you invest all your money in US Treasury bonds. With inflation hovering around 2% a year and the 10-year bond yielding about 2.7% at the time of this podcast, you're golden forever. Treasuries will almost always yield more than inflation, otherwise nobody would buy treasuries. Two, minimal risk. The next investment you can make is to invest your entire liquid net worth in a portfolio of the highest rated municipal bonds in your state. You can find 20-year muni bonds yielding 3.8% to 4% double tax-free, so no state income tax and no federal tax. So that's equivalent to like 5 to 5.5% gross interest. Not bad. In 15 and a half years, you'll have doubled your money. And if you look at the default rates for AAA municipal bonds, it's 0% according to Moody's, and for corporate bonds, AAA, it's like 0.5%. So moving on to moderate risk, the Barclays US Aggregate Bond Index provides about a 5% annual return each year, depending on which 10-year time frame you're looking at. And that's not bad. You can take more risk in individual corporate bonds, emerging market bonds, or high yield bonds, but you probably don't have to. For example, if you bought Venezuela sovereign bonds, you're just getting crushed because the government is kind of corrupt and there's sky-high inflation and all the bonds are going down. And then finally, there's higher risk, which is the stock market, which has returned anywhere from 8 to 10% a year on average, depending on the time frame you're looking at. So just like the bond market, you can buy all sorts of different types of stocks with different risk profiles. But as we know, the stock market can have violent corrections. And if you click over to the post, you can see a great chart that highlights the historical correction since 2008. In 2008, it's talking about a 57% correction, and the most recent over 10% correction was, let's say, in mid-2015, where the market went down about 13.3%. So retirees will have a combination of different types of risk levels. The question to ask and the question to figure out is what type of investment weightings one should have in each based on their risk profile. There really is no right answer because everybody's risk tolerance and financial objectives are different. But we can start by looking at the risk-reward metrics of different types of portfolios. So this is when you should definitely click over to the post and check out all these great charts that I got from Vanguard that highlights different portfolio allocations. So we're going to talk about income-based retirement portfolios, balanced retirement portfolios, and then growth-based portfolios, which are not considered appropriate for retirees. I believe that income-based portfolios are what the typical, truly satisfied retiree should focus on. There is minimal risk principal and only modest medium to long-term growth of principal. But given retirees are generally in a lower tax bracket, an income-based portfolio is usually more tax efficient. So if you have a super conservative 100% allocation in bonds, historically speaking, between 1926 and 2016, your average annual return is 5.4%. And that beats inflation by 3.4%. So you're golden. You literally don't have to do anything else if you're happy with a 5.4% return, give or take. In 14 years, your retirement portfolio will have doubled and you will have slept very, very easy. So this is the baseline, bottom, most conservative way to go. And if you look at a 30% allocation to stocks, you could improve your investment returns by 1.8% a year to 7.2%. But if you're already satisfied with the amount of money you have, who cares? Who really cares about an extra 1.8% a year? It will make no difference in your lifestyle. With a potential improvement of 1.8% a year, what are you giving up? Well, you increase the magnitude of a potential loss by 75%, going from losing potentially 8.1% with a conservative 100% bond portfolio to losing potentially 4.2% based on a 30% allocation to stocks and a 70% allocation to bonds based on history of between 1926 to 2016. Let's move on to a balanced retirement portfolio. A balanced-oriented investor seeks to reduce potential volatility by including some income-generating investments in his or her portfolio and accepting more moderate growth of principal. So for most retirees, allocating at most 60% of their funds in stocks is probably a good limit to consider. If you do that, an average annual return of 8.7% is what the model spits out, which is about 4 times the rate of inflation and 3.3 times the risk-free rate of return. But you've got to ask yourself how comfortable you'll feel losing over 20% of your money during a serious downturn. And if you're over 65 years old with no other income sources, you will likely be sweating some bullets. For the first 2 years after leaving work, my investment portfolio was around 60% stocks and 40% bonds. And once I got out of early retirement mode by working on my online business, I got more and more aggressive in stocks because my business income began to surpass my investment income. Finally, to be comprehensive, let's take a look at growth-based portfolios. These are portfolios with asset allocation towards stocks of between 70% to 100%, and these portfolio allocations are mostly for those who are looking to build a retirement nest egg you've already built. If you look at 100% allocation in stocks, the average annual return is only 10.2%, but there have been 25 years of losses out of 91 years, so that's like 28% of the time, and the worst year you would have lost 43% of your money. That's not the worst thing in the world if you're 30 years old with 20 plus years of work left in you, but not so much if your goal is to relax and spend the rest of your days cruising around the world. So unless you retired before the age of 50, have a variety of passive income streams, have a nice fat pension, run a lifestyle business, or have a net worth equal to at least 30 times your annual expenses in retirement, I wouldn't have greater than a 70% allocation to stocks. I hope this overview of risk-reward metrics for various portfolio compositions gives you an idea, a better idea of how much risk you should take and how to construct your portfolio in retirement. Don't let money get in the way of a wonderful retirement. Your investments should be a relatively worry-free tailwind, a tailwind that ensures you never have to return to the salt mines again. If you are starting to worry about your risk exposure, then dial down risk by raising more cash or rebalancing a little bit more towards bonds. Yes, it can get annoying if you are underperforming your respective benchmarks, but you've got to remember that you've already won the game. Every single dollar you make above the rate of inflation is gravy. During bull markets, you'll sometimes be able to return a greater amount from your investments than you would at your day job. So let me conclude by saying the pain of losing money is always much worse than the joy of making money. If you've already got all the money you'll ever need, there simply is no point taking outsized risk. Thanks a lot, everybody, and invest well and wisely.